Thank you very much, Junga Kandemiri, and good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from The Voice of America on Thursday, March 17th, 2016. Thank you for joining us this evening live from Washington. This is Ndimyake Mwakalyelye. Here are our top stories this evening. The Southern African Development Community, or SADC, approves an emergency drought declaration in the region.
It's a very strong statement from stakeholders in the region. It's rare.
Nearly 800 people in Zimbabwe's Bite Bridge district hit by severe floods start getting help from government and various organizations.
The Department of Social Welfare provided us with food. My own council also provided us food. And I've asked you to feed them since Saturday. Daily we give them some meal. Central government also gave us blankets.
And Zimbabweans speak out on land reform as the government prepares to compensate disempowered white farmers.
I'm glad to say, having elected Mugabe in 1980, riding on the promise that he is going to redistribute land to people, he has scored on that one. And the majority of people now own pieces of land.
These stories and much, much more coming up. Please stay tuned. The Southern African Development Community, or SADC, has approved a declaration of the regional drought disaster in acknowledgement of the severe levels of hunger and food insecurity in the region. If no action is taken to address the issue brought on by drought as a result of El Nino, there is fear that the number of people affected in Southern Africa will rise to 50 million, up from the current estimates of 28 to 30 million. International aid organizations, Oxfam, Save the Children, and Care International are jointly calling on donors to respond to the SADC call with urgency. Despite the many appeals for funding and food assistance for Zimbabwe, Oxfam's Nelly Nyangwa tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the response has been slow.
What concerned us is that there hasn't been much sense of urgency coming from donors, coming from government. And so as Oxfam, we have been lobbying quite a bit for these agencies to take action. So we saw Zimbabwe declare an emergency some 3 weeks ago. And now to see SADC coming in and declaring an emergency as well, that to us is a positive step forward. It's not enough. We need to do more. But it's positive that they have done that.
And what does this declaration of the regional drought disaster by SADC mean?
It's a very strong statement from stakeholders in the region. It's rare, and I don't think we remember when a whole region declared a disaster. But the significance of this is that SADC is acknowledging that this is unprecedented. It's a big crisis that's affecting most of the countries in the region. And as a group of governments in this region, they acknowledge that it's a big disaster that needs to be declared at the regional level. So it's a very strong political statement coming from the leadership in SADC. But secondly, it's also going to help us to highlight the plight of the people we are talking about. So we needed more voices, and the SADC is one of the stronger voices that we have been waiting for. So for me, it's an important statement because it's also going to help us be able to mobilize the resources that we have been looking for in the region. And our hope is that key stakeholders are going to look at what SADC has done as a serious message that gets them to take action.
Tell us briefly about your work in Zimbabwe, for example.
In Zimbabwe, we do a lot of development work. And under normal circumstances, when there's no crisis, we have been doing a lot of work with farmers. We have also done health work around HIV/AIDS, sexual reproductive health. We do quite a lot of work around women's rights as well. And so when we have an emergency like this, our first observation and assessment come out of the fact that we are on the ground with the flood. So we're able to pick that up.
Southern Africa Regional Director for Oxfam, Nelly Nyangwa, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Bitebridge Town Secretary Loud Ramaklapula says the situation is getting back to normal following flash floods that hit the southern border town last Friday night, affecting more than 770 people. Ramaklapula says they managed to get assistance in the form of food, blankets, clothes and water buckets from the government and other well-wishers. Of the 777 people affected, 285 are children. Rama Klapula says the floods were so severe that some of the affected people had to seek refuge on rooftops. He tells Studio 7 that they are now working to address issues of drainage in the most affected areas.
The situation for now is getting back to normal, but on Friday night and Saturday, Sunday, it was terrible. These people are at the southern tip of the town, and the main river that cuts through the town, all the water flows to that area. And where they are settled, it's almost like a V-shape. And so all the water just came through there. And some of the guys are staying in some hostels, council-owned hostels. And that's where they started getting water going up to window level, affecting them. And they go out into rooftops. And then next to that, their houses, which is drywalls. And then when those drywalls failed, the water then got into people's houses. That then became a problem. And at the end of the day, we found that 777 people were affected, of which out of those, 285 are children. And of the 285 children, 232 of them are school-going age.
Did you manage to get any assistance from the government and other organizations?
Yes, we did. The Department of Social Welfare provided us with food. My own council also provided those food, and the rest we are still feeding them since Saturday. Daily we give them some meal. Central government also gave us blankets, you know, buckets, soap, just to make them restart their lives. We also got NGOs coming in as well, pledging to assist. World Vision has also come in to assist. Even individuals have also brought in assistance to those people.
Floods sometimes bring in diseases such as diarrhea, typhoid, and other ailments. Have you had any problems so far?
No, we have not. We have not had that problem. Our health team has gone around, checked the water. We've also done disinfections of those things. The sewer lines were also cut. The water lines were also cut through that thing. So we've done some disinfections. We've also tested the water and found that it is fine, but obviously we are still going on trying to monitor the situation because you never know what may happen after about a week or so. But we are monitoring the situation. But so far, we haven't had any situation, so diarrhea or anything related to that.
That was Loud Ramaklapula, Beitbridge Town Secretary, speaking with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri. As Zimbabweans prepare to compensate white commercial farmers who were evicted from their land under President Robert Mugabe's controversial agrarian reforms, some beneficiaries maintain that the program was designed to economically empower indigenous blacks. Critics, on the other hand, believe that the land reforms were a political game played by Mr. Mugabe's government, which needed to show up support before an election featuring the opposition Movement for Democratic Change, led by Morgan Tsvangirai. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa has more details.
President Mugabe's government, which is looking for funding from international finance institutions, is now admitting that the land reform that started in 2000, targeting almost 4,000 white commercial farmers, were wrong. Lands, Rural and Resettlement Minister Douglas Mombeshora is quoted by the Mail and the Guardian newspaper saying as a result, efforts are now being made by the state to compensate the white farmers. Mombeshora did not give specific details on how much money the government needs to fully compensate the disempowered white farmers. Zimbabwe is under pressure from the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank and similar institutions to implement recently agreed measures before it accepts fresh loans. The country stopped receiving such loans about 20 years ago due to various reasons, including the controversial land reforms. Despite the government's admission that the land reforms were not conducted properly, some beneficiaries commended President Mugabe for spearheading the land reforms. One of the beneficiaries is Clifford Kupeko of Mashonaland and West Province.
One of the factors of production is land. So land is very, very critical. And I'm glad to say, having elected Mugabe in 1980, riding on the promise that he is going to redistribute land to people. He has scored on that one. And the majority of people now own pieces of land. And I must say, everyone is happy about the land issue. We are not talking about production. Production becomes another issue.
Another landowner, Jeremiah Ngwerume of Mangura, says land defines one's freedom and doesn't regret the taking of a commercial farm which was once owned by a white person.
The relationship between Mungabe and the white community started getting sour when his government was now distributing the land to the black majority of this country. Because you remember, this land was in the hands of the few whites who were in this country. People were now voicing their concern about their need for that land. Because remember, it was the main reason why the armed struggle was waged. It was because of land. And land defines your freedom. People could not wait any longer for their land. They wanted their land there and there. So Mugabe was left with no choice but to give people back their land. And this land was being taken largely from the white people.
Former Mashonaland West ZANU-PF chairman Themba Moliswa, who was expelled from the party for allegedly teaming up with other senior officials to allegedly topple the president at an elective congress, praises Mr. Mugabe for embarking on the land reform.
To me, in him being the leader of something which people had gone to fight for, where people died in the struggle to have land, he did well in making sure that it happens. I've been empowered and I will not lie. And to me, the farm is actually key in sustaining my thing, welfare and that of the extended family. So on the land reform, Mugabe certainly, as a leader, did very well.
He claimed that some attempts were made by the ruling party to take back the land from him when he was dumped by ZANU-PF. At least 300 white commercial farmers out of an estimated 3,500 remain on productive land in Zimbabwe, which contributed a lot to the country's gross domestic product before the farm seizures. Indications are that the invasions slashed the export income from crops and fueled political conflicts local and with Western nations that criticize Mr. Mugabe from forcibly taking over land owned by white commercial farmers. In terms of production on some of the farms which are lying idle, Kupego says that it has to be left for the next generation.
The land has been distributed. Imagine people who are living in overcrowded places, very unproductive places, have been now moved and now own pieces of land and now own farms. And that has never happened in Africa, let alone in the world, that one can get pieces of land or farms for free. So this is a major milestone.
But Tinashe Karemba of Makonde, a member of the Movement for Democratic Change led by Changirai, says he refused to take over one of the farms on the basis of his political affiliation. He says the land reforms were needed but done wrongly by the ZANU-PF government.
I think land reform needs to be revised, and those people with many farms and big hectares should be the hectares should be cut so that we can accommodate other people. Because it's of no point to have someone with 300 hectares whilst the production is only at 10 hectares. It's so unfair to others.
The IMF and the World Bank are engaged in Zimbabwe on releasing fresh loans for the Southern African nation, which needs it for revamping its ailing economy. Conditions for releasing the funds include the compensation of white commercial farmers and the payment of loan arrears of almost $2 billion. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Ata Chigoriwa.
Now we have some breaking news that just came in. Mazoe North Member of Parliament Edgar Chidawaenzi of ZANU-PF was reportedly found dead in his hotel inn room in Harare this afternoon. National Police spokesperson Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba has confirmed that the incident had happened but could not give further details, saying police are still at the scene investigating the matter. Charamba said, quote, "I can confirm that the MP was found dead inside his hotel room, but I do not have much details as our investigating officers are still at the scene," end quote. We have to have more details for you tomorrow.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, Zimbabweans fume over the alleged looting of $15 billion in potential diamond revenue. And today, once again, we are featuring Brian Nira taking part in a U.S. Prime show, The Voice. Stay tuned. But first, a look at regional and international news. Following this week's primary results in the U.S., presidential race, Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump appear to be on a path to winning their respective parties' presidential nominations. That puts Clinton and Trump on a collision course to meet as opponents in the general election campaign leading up to the November election. In Zanzibar, many of the voters there are preparing for an election rerun Sunday after polls were nullified in the region last year. But the main opposition party is urging a boycott, and problems with ballot papers are causing many to wonder how a rerun will result in a better electoral process. And finally, people in a number of African countries, including Burundi, Benin, Rwanda, Guinea, Liberia, Tanzania, Madagascar, and Togo, are the least happy people in the world, according to the World Happiness Report 2016. John Clifton, managing partner with the U.S.-based global research company Gallup, said the report took into account countries' per capita GDP, life expectancy, corruption, social support, and freedom to make life choices as indicators of happiness. This is Studio 7 coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. The alleged looting of potential diamond revenue, estimated by President Robert Mugabe to be about $15 billion, has caused a stir in the country, with opposition parties urging the 92-year-old Zimbabwean leader to step down. Opposition parties claim that Mr. Mugabe's colleagues, some top state security officials and people linked to the ruling party should be held responsible for the suspected looting of the diamonds, which was once highlighted in 2012 by Partnership Africa Canada. Partnership Africa Canada alleged that at least $2 billion worth of diamonds were stolen from the country's diamond fields and ended up in the pockets of President Mugabe's ruling elite. The same allegations were once made by former finance minister Tendai Biti. Then, mines minister Obed Mpofu dismissed these allegations as wishful thinking. Now, he's refusing to open up to the issue. But the latest revelations by the president and a state order for diamond mining companies to cease operations for accountability purposes indicate that all is not well in the diamond-rich Manicaland province. For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube reached Nick Mangwana, a ZANU-PF activist living in London, and George Mkwananzi, deputy spokesperson of the People's Democratic Party. Mangwana says quantifying the amount of diamonds and funds looted is an uphill task.
In the president's interview, he indicated that it wasn't very clear. The computations of the figure was not clear. He said something to the effect that $2 billion had been declared, but they suspected that it could have been $15 billion or more that had been realized from the diamond proceeds. So it basically means, by the nature of the, let me call it a crime, by the nature of the crime itself, in unquantified diamond carats, it's going to be very difficult for anybody to come up with a precise figure of what happened, because it's diamonds that we're pilfering.
Let's get to you, Mr. Mkwananzi. What do you think about this amount?
As people of Zimbabwe, we are disheartened and dismayed that such kind of kleptomania has happened under the nose of the president. And it's actually very funny that he's the one who comes out now to say such kind of an amount of money was stolen. Where was he when this was happening? Really, wasn't he part of the scam that caused such kind of siphoning of such a strategic national resource such as, you know, diamond in a country which actually needed that kind of huge, massive financial injection at that juncture when the economy was crumbling and needed to be mended. So we are really very disappointed that a whole president will come out now and look around and say such a thing happened. He actually must consider resigning with his entire entourage of cabinet.
Mr. Mangwana, it appears as if this is the song throughout Zimbabwe. What can you say?
The disappointment is understandable. It's across all quarters. We only need to pick the people's voice, which is our ZANU-PF mouthpiece this week. You would find it has got diamonds, the issue of 15 billion, splattered all over the place. So it basically means the sentiment is across the political divide. But let's not forget that this loss is predicted to have happened between 2009 and probably now. In between, we had a government of national unity. In between, we had a joint cabinet. And the joint cabinet, the cabinet makes collective decisions. The cabinet has got collective responsibility. So, yes, the president was head of that state with also another head of government with him as well. And the cabinet is... So if everybody, everybody should take responsibility for it. There is no one particular person. Yes, I understand those who say the buck stops with him. That's fair enough. But this is criminal activity. So with criminal activity, you cannot simply say, okay, because the house has been burgled, then let's punish the father. Come on. It's criminal. That's it.
Mr. Mkwananzi, so he says punish everybody. And there was a minister responsible for the mines ministry, by the way. Who has to be punished here, apart from the president?
Like he rightly points out, this is the time of the GNU. And Comrade Dendaibiti has said before, who actually was the Minister of Finance then, it appears that there was a deliberate attempt to undermine his ministry then and suffocate it and deny it of revenue so that then they were going to project him as a failure, you know, at the helm of that ministry. So they created some detour avenues around that ministry that were outside the parameters of official regular government structures that were then used to access the revenues that were realized from the diamonds in Chiatwa. And these are the monies that were used in various areas across the country to finance not government projects, but ZANU-PF projects, including, you know, oiling their machine for the next elections that were going to be held. Otherwise, where do you think they got that kind of money to, campaign in that election where the Minister of Finance was reluctant to facilitate the elections because in the state coffers, there was nothing. But it appears money was there somewhere and ZANU-PF was pushing strongly for an election. So you can see that we can't speak of just isolating and targeting the Minister of Mines only. They were all involved, the army, the police. Just forget about members of the MDC who were in the government of unity. They don't know anything about that diamond.
Now, Mr. Mangwana, those people are asking, where is the money? So what is the way forward?
Tendaibiti is basically self-absorbing in his own self-promotion and aggrandizement here. You would think the whole ZANU-PF was targeted at him. So if the money was somewhere where it was being diverted from his access, now where is it?
So that was a panel discussion moderated by Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. You heard from George Mkwananzi of the People's Democratic Party and also Nick Mangwana, ZANU-PF's London-based regional chairperson. The government claims that it only received approximately $2 billion in diamond revenue from the Marange fields. Companies declared varying amounts in diamond sales to the state-controlled Zimbabwe Mining Development Corporation and the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority. Don't miss the second edition of this panel discussion tomorrow, right here on Studio 7. Today we continue with our interview with Brian Nira, born to Zimbabwean parents, and he's taking part in a U.S. Prime music show called The Voice. Nira is a musician who is currently vying for the top spot on that hit show. He appeared on The Voice, and he is on the team of artist and producer Pharrell Williams, who he won over after singing his own rendition of Pharrell's Happy. He speaks with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo about his parents finding out about his audition for The Voice.
So my parents didn't even, like, really know what I was doing until The Voice actually, like, paid for a ticket for me to come out to Los Angeles. That's when they, you know, they finally first believed what I was doing. My parents are my biggest supporters, but they've loved this process. And it's funny that on the night that my blind audition aired, you know, social media and Twitter, you know, was almost more excited and happy to see my mom than me.
When your audition tape came out, everyone fell in love when you sang Jesus Loves Me. You know, people were in tears, people were crying. I don't know if you can give us a little bit of a Jesus Loves Me.
A little bit of Jesus Loves Me?
Yes. If that's okay.
Yeah, sure. All right, here we go. Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to him belong. They are weak, but he is strong.
Jesus loves me, this I know. For the Bible tells me so. Little ones to him belong. They are weak, but he is strong.
What's your hope? Of course, I assume that you want to win The Voice.
First of all, I want to let you know that I'm coming to Zimbabwe. I'll be there the first week of June. So when I'm done with this, we're hoping to put together something, you know, a concert or something out there. But my hope is to travel the world, you know, just continuing to spread this message and continuing to do music. You know, that's what we're going to do. You know, once it did, you know, because this process will end, and we have an amazing platform that, you know, that will be had, you know, coming from this show. And so we're just going to continue to take hope's stand and to spread it across the world.
What's your message for those that are listening and even, you know, the young Zimbabweans who are like, I love to sing. I'd love to be able to sing on a grand stage like that.
My message to them is this. Don't ever, ever, ever for one moment in your life stop dreaming. Don't ever let your circumstances or situations hinder the dream that God himself has placed within you. Because what you have to realize is this, the dream that's inside of you is so much bigger than just you.
That was Brian Nira, contestant in the U.S. Prime Music Time show called The Voice, and he was speaking there with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo from Los Angeles. Now stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Today is Thursday, so we have our Women's Roundtable, and our hosts Praxedes Jeremiah and Marvelous Mklanga Nyahuye will be talking with listeners and experts about children with acute malnutrition due to the severe drought that has gripped not only Zimbabwe but the whole Southern African region. What is the role of women in such issues? Don't miss it, and please participate. You can text us or call us on 1-202-465-0318, and we'll call you back. Again, that number is 1-202-465-0318. Know that song, Happy, Pharrell Williams. I think the whole world has been danced to that song, so there you heard it on Studio 7 coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. Before we go, a quick recap of our top stories. Mazowe North Member of Parliament Edgar Chidawayenzi of ZANU-PF was reportedly found dead in his hotel room in Harare this afternoon. Nearly 800 people in Zimbabwe's Beitbridge district, hit by severe floods, start getting help from the government and various organizations. The Southern African Development Community, or SADC, has approved a declaration of the regional drought disaster in the wake of a crippling dry spell. And that's our broadcast this evening. Please stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungamile Nkomo. This is Ndimiake Mwakalielie in Washington, wishing you a very, very good day.